Welcome back in to David L. Gray of Code and Unscripted. We got one thing for today. We got to talk about really what's going on, what I think is really a blessing that's going on in a lot of places, a lot of countries in Africa right now. Catholicism in Nigeria, Sudan, Eritrea, Egypt, Libya, Algeria. Also throw in China, Nicaragua. Right now, inspiring story. But if you stay on Catholic social media long enough, you'll run into Catholics who we can call them for the moment. We can say traditional Latin Mass only Catholics. They're sort of like the King James Bible only Protestants, right? Protestants who believe only the King James Bible has the Word of God in it, right? Traditional Latin Mass only Catholics believe that only traditional Latin Mass is the path to holiness, right? So, some of these traditional Latin Mass only Catholics will swear by the fact that the Novus Ordo is bad, right? It was written by modernists, Freemasons, Protestants, right? There's nothing good in it. And there's another segment of SSPX, Society of St. Pius the 10th Catholics, who would say you can't even go to a Novus Ordo Mass to fulfill your Sunday obligation. Now, that group, I just call them traditional Latin Mass supremacists, right? Yet, let's return to those places in Africa, China, Nicaragua. There are places in the world like this where Novus Ordo Catholic churches, parishes, and dioceses are actually producing saints. The only places in the world, the only churches in the world that are producing saints and martyrs right now are your Novus Ordo churches in these places that I named. These Catholics are being killed, murdered, kidnapped, having their churches burned down frequently by Muslims, by jihadists, by communists. Frequently, over 50,000 in the last five years. Yet they still return to the Novus Ordo parish. They still go to their Novus Ordo church on a Sunday, knowing that someone strapped with a bomb may come in there, take them all out, or with a gun or a machete. This may be their last day, yet they go to this church that some of us are saying that you can't even fulfill your Sunday obligation there. It's bad. Designed by Freemasons. In some of these dioceses, such as in Liberia, Kenya, Tanzania, these Novus Ordo diocese seminaries are full, busting at the seams. Their seminaries have a wait list. Novus Ordo. So I think this reality, I think it should be enough for some of these traditional Latin Mass only Catholics to say, hey, okay, I get that in the United States, this isn't our experience. We have these clown masses, these mass nightmares. We have some weird things going on in these Novus Ordo parishes. But in Africa, this is an aberration. This is something different. We should just leave this alone. Whatever they're doing, the wheel isn't broken. Let it go. But no. We want to export our liturgy wars. We want to export those to Africa, which I think is insane. I think it's harmful. I want to tell you why. I'm going to give you the three reasons why I think this is happening. And I want to tell you about some of the complexities and some of the issues that are going on in Africa with tribes and some of the stigmas that are going on there that makes this exporting of the traditional Latin Mass, they're really untenable and harmful, and a setback to what's going on there, which I think is, again, an inspiring story. So this is Off Code, Unscripted with David L. Gray. Let's get into the show now. And concerning this desire to export the liturgy wars into Africa, this false dichotomy that there's only two liturgies, right? There's a traditional Latin Mass and there's a Novus Ordo. We have to pit these two things against each other, right? Until one wins out. In spite of the will not being broken in a lot of countries in Africa, I'm hearing from a lot of these traditional Latin Mass only Catholics that Africa still needs to embrace the traditional Latin Mass if they're going to be true Catholics and really take their Catholicism to another level. This post I'm about to read you from Dr. Janet E. Smith, it summates what I like to call a good intention that many traditional Catholics have. But I'll explain to you why I disagree with what she said in her Facebook post here. She says, "The trip to Uganda has been extraordinary, at times overwhelming. It is still early in the day, so this may not be the most extraordinary event of this day, but it's hard to imagine what could top it. At all the talks I've given, now over to 1,000 seminarians and priests, faculty and staff, I've asked if any of the attendees have ever attended a traditional Latin Mass. Not one has answered an affirmative, and it is possible just about none of them has ever heard of it. But when I described it to one seminary rector, I barely made it through telling him about the Spurges that he declared that he had already wanted to experience it. The truly exceptional priest who is our primary host, Father Alex Mugalasi, did not intentionally warm to the idea of traditional Latin Mass when I spoke of it to him. He was favorable to the Ad Orientem position, the communion rail, and communion on the tongue, but just cannot imagine the benefits of participating in a Mass said in the ancient language. I tried several ways to get him to grasp the idea of a sacred language to no avail. I said, he just needs to experience it. There is a traditional Latin Mass community in Kampala held at the very spot where the second Uganda martyr was martyred, a parish called St. Denis Ebigualu, the name of the martyr, and is ministered by the Institute of the Good Shepherd out of France. Though the celebrant was from Poland, correction, he identified as English. The Mass was sublime, and it was impossible not to be acutely aware that this was the Mass that the Uganda martyrs attended, and to be extremely grateful for their witness. It was attended by 150 souls. The singing was sublime. Father Alex was won over immediately and agreed that all Ugandans should be exposed to such beautiful liturgy, and said he understood why. It is good that there should be a sacred language. He even asked if I thought the church would ever return to the liturgy. As I said, I am overwhelmed. You know, my commentary now is not about Dr. Janet E. Smith. She's someone who I respect. She was on our Return to Sacred course that we have at St. Dominic's Media. She taught a lesson in that course, which I invite you to go watch. It's wonderful. But what she said is really, it really just gives me an opportunity to respond, because she does articulate what I've heard from many traditional Latin Mass only Catholics, that even though the will does not seem to be broken in Africa in a lot of ways, they would be better off still if they embraced the traditional Latin Mass. And I think there's three reasons why. Right, this is a notion. This is a belief. This is an opportunity for people to try to push the liturgy wars into Africa. This belief that Africans would just be better off if they embrace the traditional Latin Mass. There's three reasons why I think this happens. The first one is just comes from a good heart, a pure heart. It's a good intention and reminds us of God. It's because we, as human beings, we desire to share that which we love. Why? Because we were created in the Imago Dei, right? We are the image and likeness of God. God who is love. Love cannot ever keep itself a secret. There's no such thing as a secret admirer. The nature of love always desires to share itself with those who it loves. This is why God is always revealing himself, always coming to us, this is why the whole universe and everything in it reveals God, speaks of God, shares God. This is just the basic principle of love. Love always desires to share itself. So when we love something, we want to share it. I think of my friend Jason when I share that concept. Because I know whenever I'm talking to my Jason, you know, he's my best friend. Whenever he tells me the girl's name, who he's dating or that he's interested in, I pause. I saw him tell me more. Because he's a very private person, right? I know whenever he says the girl's name, oh, this must be something, right? Because if it wasn't, he'd just refer to somebody he's seen or somebody he's about to go visit. He'll say, oh, girl. Oh, yeah, or this female or something like that. Oh, he said a name, right? He's sharing this with me, right? These are clues we pick up, right, from people who we are in relationship with. They're tales of when they really love something. My wife, Felicia, I know when she really loves a restaurant because she wants to share it with me, right? She said, oh, you know, if she went there before me, she's like, oh, you gotta go, you know? I really know if she loves it. If it's like a Michelin star, it's like one of those restaurants that, you know, you're going to walk away paying $200, $400. If she wants to take me and she says she's paying, oh, she loves this, right? She's a foodie. So that's the first reason why we want to share the traditional land mass with the Africans in the various countries of Africa. You know, we just think, you know, we love it and we want to share what we love. Fine. The second reason why this happens, why we want to fix that which is not broken, I think comes from a place of cowardice. Yes, and I think we Catholics should admit that we're cowards when it comes to evangelization. When we want to evangelize, especially traditional Catholics, we don't think of evangelization as evangelizing Muslims or atheists or Mormons. No. When we think of evangelization, we think of convincing Catholics to be more Catholic, right? We're cowards. We're nothing like the Mormons. We're nothing like the Jehovah's Witness. We're nothing like a lot of Protestants. They're far more courageous than we are. Even though, you know, I would critique many Protestants who, you know, when they go on mission, they go to places like the Philippines, you know, places in South America, you know, Catholic countries to try to evangelize Catholics. You know, there's some cowardice there as well, but I think we're bigger cowards. Because when we evangelize, we're just trying to fix Catholics, no one else. So I think it comes from a place, that place right there, right? And it really points to the myth that we hear. You know, sometimes we hear, I've said this at times as well, that, oh, the traditional Latin Mass is growing. Just look at the parishes. They're bursting at the seams. They're filled. They have young families. These are the talking points. But there's a mathematical problem, right? We have to admit that. If we take any diocese, say in this diocese, I don't know, Youngstown Diocese, right? Oh, Youngstown, Ohio. So let's say it has 100 parishes. Two of them traditional Latin Mass, okay? Yeah, in a diocese that big, that size, with two Latin Mass parishes, yeah, they're going to be bursting at the seams, young families, right? It's going to be jam-packed. Flip it around, right? Make 98 of those parishes traditional Latin Mass, make two of them Novus Ordo. Well, we'll say a thing about the same Novus Ordo. It's busting at the seams, has young families, right? So that's a bit of a myth, but it points to the fact that we'll even use myths to get out of not being cowards, right? We don't want to expand. We don't want to bring people in. As Catholics, we're just always trying to fix Catholics. We're cowards, right? So it comes from that place as well. That if I just take these Novus Ordo Catholics in Africa, right, and just make them traditional Latin Mass, somehow we've moved the needle some way, right? We really believe that because we're cowards. The third reason has to do with a paradox. And I think this is the most uncomfortable one of the three, other than even more, I think, discomforting than the fact that admitting that we're cowards. We don't want to evangelize people outside the church. We just want to fix Catholics. But the third reason is, I think there's a paradox. That we do feel just a little bit uncomfortable as traditional Catholics. That these Catholics in these countries like Nigeria, I think altogether in Africa, particularly Nigeria, over 50,000, over the past 5 years, over 50,000 Catholics have been either murdered or physically harmed and kidnapped. It's a crazy number, this persecution that's going on, in not just Nigeria, but yeah, other places that are named as well. Massive persecution. Yet they still show up to Mass. Their Novus Ordo parish. They still show up on that Sunday knowing that someone can come in strapped with a bomb or with guns and kill them all. Yet they still go to their Novus Ordo parish. That makes us a little bit uncomfortable when we admit that and we say that out loud. Because the narrative here, again, is that the Novus Ordo is bad. It cannot change anybody. It doesn't make saints. It's a mass made by Freemasons, Protestants, Modernists. How can anything good come out of it? Yet here they are, being made martyrs and saints out of this mass. It's a little bit uncomfortable, right? Especially for those who think the traditional Latin mass is the only way. There's a conflict here, right? How can both these things be true? It's kind of like a guy who has just an objectively beautiful wife, though she's had some surgery, right? She has some lip injections, some breast injections, some butt injections, right? Whatever. He knows she's a beautiful wife. No other man has a wife as beautiful as she. Yeah, when he goes over to his friend's house, right? He's sitting there and his wife comes out and she's not as beautiful as his. And she says, "Hey, husband, can I make you a sandwich?" And the guy says, yeah, make me a sandwich, wife. Oh, make Ken one too. We appreciate it. Now, the guy with the objectively beautiful wife, he's a little bit uncomfortable right now, right? Here's my wife. She's the most beautiful woman in the world, but she doesn't make me sandwiches. This is the paradox. Many traditional Latin Mass Catholics, they can tell you all about the boss, the outside of it. They can tell you how beautiful it is, how intricate the designs. They can tell you about the history of the vase, how your life can be transformed if you bring this vase into your house and just observe it. It's so beautiful. Do you see the lines? Do you see the artistry and the work that went into making this vase? Just look how beautiful it is. Turn it around. Spin it. The vase is extraordinary. That's the man with the wife, right? The objectively beautiful wife. But what Africans are doing is something different. Yes, they're Novus Ordo. There's nothing really beautiful about the vase, right? But they're not worried about that because what they're doing is living out the contents of the vase. They're pouring it out, right? The divinization, the contemplation and action both of those things together. They're being in the world who the liturgy has created them to be. And this is a point you often hear me say on my weekly podcast, Liturgical Sense of the Readings at Mass, that's all the liturgy wants us to do. Be in the world who we are receiving, because it doesn't matter which liturgy you go to. It really doesn't. It doesn't matter what liturgy you go to. The question is, are you living the liturgy? That's it. Why? Because we were not created for worship alone. If we were created for worship alone, then we would just stay in the Mass. In fact, we would have to stay in one of the other liturgies, the traditional Mass, the Ambrosian, the Byzantine, whatever. We would have to stay there if we were created for worship alone. But we were not created for worship alone because we were not created for God alone. We were also created for other, for neighbor. Because this is the nature of love. We have to share. We have to give away. Therefore, it's not how well we worship, but how well we live that which we worship. So the liturgy doesn't matter. You go to any valid liturgy. Are you living it out? Are you pouring the vase? Are you making a sandwich? Now, all of Africa is not thriving. I mean, there's places that are struggling deeply with Protestantism. South Africa, the Ivory Coast, Cote d'Ivoire, Rwanda. So perhaps in those places, there's maybe something, especially Cote d'Ivoire, that's essentially dead in a lot of ways. The most Catholics, the most beautiful churches, the largest Catholic churches yet. Dead. But then there's other places that the faith is quite alive. So I would say there's no need to export the liturgy wars just based on that account. In fact, I think it's the last thing that Africans need are liturgy wars. The last thing they need is people fighting in Africa over liturgy, reading books by Peter Kwasniewski, you know, promoting just one thing all the time without getting to the essence of the liturgy itself, living it. I think there's some ignorance as well with this notion that the Africans need the traditional Latin Mass, right? And then we should export it. Now, by export, I'm recognizing the Americanism in the traditional Latin Mass movements. All right, so we know there's no way to export what Africans had long before America had it, right? I don't mean it in that sense. I mean the Americanism of the movement of spreading the traditional Mass, evangelizing Catholics. Right? I think there's ignorance there because it fails to recognize the complexity of Africa and African people in various countries. I was a little bit embarrassed, secondhand embarrassment, you know, hearing Dr. Janet Smith tell this story. Because I understand the culture a little bit, right? And I understand where Africans are at with things that are perceived as American or Western imports or exports to Africa. And a suspicion they have on everything coming out of the United States. Because they lived the tragedy of Europeans, and their descendants, and even China today, always trying to fix Africa. Always importing something to fix Africans. Europeans and other people always thinking they know better from Africans than Africans know for themselves. It's a very complex relationship. There's a lot of distrust there. So even though the liturgy is ancient, it's older than America, right? It's still perceived as, man, what are these Americans trying to fix us now with? What are they doing now? Oh, we need this now, right? So there's that automatic distrust. And it's not just about the Democrats and the things they want to export to Africa, homosexuality, abortion, you know, you name it. It's also, they don't know what to think sometimes, the African, like what's coming out of America now. There's some distrust there, right? So when I read this story about Dr. Smith telling this African person, you just need to take this thing and it'll make you better. A little secondhand embarrassment, right? Because I can imagine some of the interior conflict that he may have been feeling. It's complex because not only is there a distrust of whatever is European and I've heard is sinless, there's also a distrust of Africa itself. So the African is always questioning, right? There's this thing like, I cannot be too African, nor can I be too European, right? This is why you see a lot of Africans, you speak to them, who come to America, they'll tell you these African-Americans, so-called these liberal African-Americans, they're more African than Africans, right? They're dressing African. They're making up holidays like Kwanzaa. They're calling themselves African-American. They're acting because they're posing on what they think is African, right? And that's how these Africans are more African than us, right? So that's why sometimes you see Africans come to the United States, they don't even deal with the African-American, right? Because there's some discomfort there. And there's a lot of history there. I mean, it's weird. It's very, very complex. There's a lot of ignorance about this. So we have to think about these things before we say, oh, we can export something. Or we have to tell them to do something, right? We have to recognize the complexity that the African has. You see a lot of Africans, they will have, like I said, there's a tension there. They want to embrace some of their history. This is why a lot of Africans, they always have a European middle name, Christian, Joseph, whatever. There's some sort of embrace there, and also there's a rejection of Africa at the same time. So it's complex, and I can really make a whole video about that, but it's just something I just want to plant that seed there before we start pushing this thing, these liturgy wars into Africa. And really, the other thing is just that you don't want liturgy wars in Africa just because Africans are very tribal. Very tribal. Tribe matters. Throughout Africa, even South Africa, your tribe matters. Who's your people? What tribe do you belong to? And that matters. In local, regional violence still breaks out in parts of Africa because of tribes. Personal violence breaks out between individuals because of tribe. You know, in the United States, sometimes we think of concepts and, you know, in terms of the United States, we see these socially engineered constructs of black, white, you know, these imaginary things, how we divide the human race into these sub-races or these subgroups. And that's how we think. We think, oh, black, white, Hispanic. Yeah, we go to Africa and we see, oh, everybody's the same there. No. Not at all. This is much deeper than what you see. So pushing the liturgy wars into Africa is not healthy for Africans, because who knows what can break out if people are fighting over liturgy there, right? Now, me, you know, if somebody says something stupid, like Kennedy Hall, he says, like, stupid stuff all the time about the Novus Ordo. Oh, you can't go to a Novus Ordo Mass, right? And I'll pop off and, you know, say the guy's an idiot, right? You're a clown. Fine. What's somebody going to do to me, right? I don't care. Right? Even if it comes to a fist fight, been fighting all my life. You want to swing at me over this, right? It'll be the last time you swing. But that's different, right? First of all, nobody's going to do that in the United States. Nobody's going to fist fight over you know, the liturgy wars, right? Because all people are doing is talking. Most of these people who talk about this stuff have never been into a fist fight. They're just all talk, no bite, right? But liturgy wars in Africa? It'd be worse than what we see right now in places in India, right? And they're fighting over the liturgy there. Liturgy wars there, right? In both of which, you know, Pope Francis has instigated India and the United States, right? But liturgy wars in Africa? Are you serious? My gosh, the machetes are going to come out in no time. People don't realize. We just don't think about things. We really don't. And so, what I really have to say to the African people is ignore everything that's going on in the United States with the liturgy wars. Ignore it. It's not serious. Keep living the liturgy. Keep pouring out that vase. And for all the traditional Latin Mass Catholics who think that's a good idea, exporting liturgy wars into Africa, please stop. This is far more complex than you can ever imagine. I understand some of the things are just coming from a good heart, just want to share what you love. I get that part. But you just have to logically think things through to their logical consequence. And I don't think you've thought this through, exporting the liturgy wars into Africa. You just haven't. Leave Africa alone. If something's going to develop out of the places where they already have traditional Latin Mass, if something's going to develop, let it develop naturally, right? Or what's going to happen with the same thing you saw in Rwanda when the Europeans came in there and they divided the Rwandans up into these Hutu Tutsi tribes? And next thing you know, these people are at each other's throats, right? We don't need to create these tribes where there's already tribal issues. So that's all I have to say about that. I hope it was coherent. But if not, just listen to it again. I'm sure it makes sense eventually. But until then, until next time, blessings and shalom to you and yours. And I just want you to live your life like salvation matters, because Jesus truly does love you more than you love yourself. And I'll see you next time. Peace.